So welcome everyone to the Chinuch Chabad, number 1841-3. I'm not like very curious, I don't have everything so organized, but it's number 1843-4, or 3, B, and it's pre Sarbatevis, Topshin, Pei, Beis. The 782. Huh? Yeah, I want to pick a topic tonight. So since it's a chinuchvad, we welcome all the branchers who are either back or here. Thank you very much. Whichever madrega you're on. If you're back, so it's one madrega. If you're here for the first time, so you get high madrega, chozer b'tshuva. You know, and there's really, it's very, very, very special to have you. I branched in a couple of places. I branched in New Haven a couple of times, and in Miami. Eventually, I think I got my job in Miami because my branching in Miami, because otherwise they wouldn't have known who I was, most likely. And not most likely, for sure. Would they have hired me just because I did a good job teaching Bekiyas in Queens in 10th grade? Stum or not. So I put a, and New Haven also is very special branching there. So yeshkoach to the people who are here. And I hope you'll get out of the experience in branching. It's different than learning in the yeshiva. Hopefully get the experience of the branching, you know, as much as I got when I was branching. So I hope so. Okay, so I want to speak about a couple of things. I want to start off with a ha'ara I had on in Mesillas Yesharim, Perek Aleph. And it occurred to me, if I'm wrong, so I say the shmuz without the ha'ara, but if I'm right, it was pretty fascinating to me. Let's see. So he says in the, it's not in the Perek Aleph, it's the Hakdama. In the Hakdama. So you don't have Mesillas Yesharim in front of you, so I feel funny reading it inside, so I'll just do a loose translation. He writes, if we'll be Ma'ayan into Ian Amiti, the true Ian, we would find the truth. Umekivim latzmenu, we'll be mative to ourselves if we find the truth. Umilandim oso lacherim, and we'll teach others. Umekivim lahem gamkein, and then we'll do good for them also. So I had a kasha which I wrote. I'm writing ha'aras on this Mesillas Yesharim, so maybe one day I could sell it. I asked the kasha, the chora kasha. Now I can read my own sefer. How did the Mechaber know that you're going to teach others? Maybe you're not going to teach others. Not everyone's is Marbitz Torah. So how does he know? Maybe a person is going to be a stick-in-the-mud, fuddy-duddy IRS accountant sitting behind a desk all day long, and that's all he's going to be doing is counting, you know, $13.42, $13.42, $13.42, you know, press equal, divided by three, and it comes out $13.42. How does he know he's going to be teaching others? Like, why will he talk to anyone? Who says he's going to talk to anyone? Again, he says, if he's me'ayin in this Dover Ian Amiti, he'll find the truth, u'meitivim latzmenu, and you'll teach it to others, u'meitivim lahem gamkein, it'll be made to them. How do you know? So, the answer is pashut, but just to say it out, that if a person stumbles on to something like diamonds that are mamish spread across, all you have to do is just bend down and pick up the diamond. So you're going to tell someone, pick up the diamond. That's not costing you anything. Just pick up the diamond. I went to this light show Let's say Shabbos, my wife, the Fairchild something, is that what it's called?
Fairchild Gardens.
Fairchild what?
Gardens.
Yeah, Fairchild Gardens. So it was night, and they have these big lamps, and they're designed, it's dark, and they have little designs on it, and you spin it around, and I didn't know that you're supposed to be looking at the floor. I think just like spinning around, because people were spinning it around. So I went underneath it, and like I spun it around like the Wheel of Fortune. I spin it around, and it's woo-woo-woo-woo, and I'm staying. And a guy passing by says, "Slow it down and look at the floor." My gosh! And he walked by, like angry at me, like, "Slow it down and look at the floor." So I didn't think like he would, a guy, random guy, walk. Maybe he was talking to someone else. But then, when nobody was looking, I slowed it down, and I looked at the floor. It was beautiful. So I was doing it all wrong, you know. So you see that when you have something so amazing, it's vade. What do you mean? Of course you can tell everyone else. You stumbled into a diamond. This is mamish olam amiti. This is the ian amiti. You found the truth. And this is, you don't have to go into Habotzes Torah for that. Anyone who finds the ian amiti, of course he's going to do that. What's he going to do? Of course he's going to do that. Well, again, we're not being politically correct. We're not necessarily even talking about, you know, chinuch as a parnasa. But of course, a person's going to be doing that. You're going to be telling everyone, of course, melam demos alachem, my tivlam gamkein, of course. I didn't want to say that, but. Just the point is, when a person does see something so fascinating, some truth, so he shares it with others. So we find a diamond, of course we're going to say the truth. So what happens if a person wants to do that? So I thought it would be good just to go through the first 10 steps. If a person wants to be mated to somebody, of course if you start talking to them like, you know, God is true and the end is near, and if you want, you know, heaven, choose here, they're going to lock you up. You know, so if a person wants to reach somebody, unfortunately, it's not as easy as just going over to them and telling them, oh, do this here. There are so many steps. I was trying to, you know, concretize all the steps that I feel could be helpful. Somebody just wants to know the Aleph Beis. It is probably Pashut. I didn't read this in a book. It probably is Pashut to many, but a lot of things aren't Pashut, and why not have the advantage? You know, also, Derech Agav, I was talking to some of the Rebbeim in there. The guys in the high school, as a rule, I think the guys in the Beis Medrash, I know we have high school guys here, but since you already saw the light, you already are on the other side. So the guys in the high school, for the most part, think everyone in the Beis Medrash is bizarre. Everyone is off their trannies, off they're crazy. They're someone like drank the Kool-Aid. Someone they think they're, one guy told me today, they're robots. They just like, someone turned the buttons on the back of you, 12 hours of day, I'm going to learn. And they think that is like so easy, and you just do it. They mamish think that's the case. Every one of them. No, they do not.
We thought the same thing.
Once you go to the other side, they think it's crazy.
I thought the same thing.
One guy told me, I know this is on recording, and he's not here, but I'm going to use his name, and yes, you should tell him. You should tell him. I think I could say the name. So it's a compliment. Well, I think it's a compliment for the guy, so I'm going to say the compliment. So one guy says, I can't count to my Beis Medrash, I'm not Shmuel Chaim Dreyfus. So I said, but Shmuel Chaim, what do you mean Shmuel Chaim Dreyfus? They think everyone is Shmuel Chaim Dreyfus. You know, okay, I don't want to, let me lush, I in horror. He's wonderful. But they think that about everyone. Every time they walk into the Beis Medrash, they see guys learning. So to them, it's like, it makes no sense. You know, they it's very hard for them to learn. And they can't even fathom themselves learning. Like when I come to the Beis Medrash with them, it's with an assigned four Rashis and one Tosfos and nine lines of a Gemara with a worksheet, we're going to have a test on this. And without that, they couldn't learn for 35. They couldn't learn for 30 minutes, stretching it. And if I wasn't there, they would that mamish pack out. But because this is where they're holding. They're holding by that, so they don't chop that you understand that it's hard. So they unfortunately think that they feel, even though no one says anything, they feel it's like a condescending relationship. Nobody wants to go into a condescending relationship. So like the Gemara in Kedushin says that if a girl marries a boy and the guy says Haram Kadesh Yisli Amanas Shani Yisrael, I'm sorry, Amashani Kohen, and it turns out that he's a Yisrael, so Mechatos, she thought she's getting a Kohen, she gets a loser Yisrael, okay? But what happens if the guy says, I marry you Amanas Shani Yisrael, and it turns out that he's a Kohen? So the Gemara says also, no Kedushin, or I don't remember, Suffolk Kedushin, but no Kedushin. Why? What do you mean? She's getting a Kohen. Isn't that better? So no, it's not better, because I don't remember the exact words in the Gemara, but the Gemara says, a girl could say, a shoe that's bigger than my foot, of what worth is it to me? Who wants a shoe that's bigger than my foot? You mind going to a shoe store? Says, it's $50 for a shoe, but that's a 9. I got a 12. It's too big. Okay, you know what? I'll give it to you for the same price. It's a bigger shoe. You get more leather for the same price as a 9. I'm giving you a 12. But no, nobody wants a shoe that's bigger than its foot. So in their minds, the Batei Midrashos that they don't see, that they hear about, oh, they heard that in this place they do that, in this place they have fun, but it's not, they're viewing it, and it's not, it's just the way it is. I've been living with this phenomenon for, 20 plus years. That is the way most high schools, the guys who break through in high school, who are learning already in the high school, they don't think that. So Mamela, those guys naturally have a greater affinity to the Beis Medrash, because they don't view the Beis Medrash guys that way. Mamela, they relate to the Beis Medrash guys more. They realize, oh yeah, it was hard for them also, I cracked through, and now I'm in. So whatever, everyone I think has an achrayus to somehow find one guy who you have a shtick relationship with, explain to them that that's not the way it is. Every day, they don't know every day it's hard to learn. They think every day it's easy. You just wake up and you just learn for 12 hours a day. They don't get any Nisoyan involved. And it's really, I feel bad for that. I feel bad. Now, most of them are going to make a decision going to a Beis Medrash, but some of them, because of this, are going to shortchange themselves in the type of Beis Medrash they're going to go to, or they're going to go halfway across the country to the Beis Medrash because they think that over there that the guys are not robots, but the same guys over there are just right here. So that's Chabal. So there's only so much the Rebbeim could do. Obviously, we're further away from 12th grade than they are, than you are. So, and also, if you see the light, then you see them. So the Sharm, it's for sure to do it. Just people don't realize it. So again, so I want to give a couple of steps. How many did I write here? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I probably would have come up with a 10, but I thought I had 10. But we'll come up with a 10th. Okay, and 9. Okay. Okay, the first thing is, you don't go over and spook anyone. People have to feel comfortable. So the first conversation you have with someone that you think is mamish derech agav, kelachar yad. You know how to bump into somebody? You bump into them. Now, sometimes you have to plan to bump into someone. So you have to just bump into them. You see that, and you figure out his routine, and one day you just happen to be standing like, oh, how are you? Oh, is that yours? Oh, you very, oh, what's your name again? And you strike up a conversation. It's like not formal, it's derech agav, and it's, people don't get spooked from that. There's a boy who was not in yeshiva, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted to talk to him, so I asked one of his friends if I can call him. And get me his number, it's okay if I call him. So he was too spooked out for me to call him, so, you know, I didn't want to. So I told the guy, you know what, give him my number and tell him he can call me. You know, I don't think he's going to call me, but I have to figure out how to bump into him. People don't like to be, like, gone over to sometimes. They want to first know the person that they're going to speak with. At the beginning of the year, you know, for me, with a new class, I put no social pressures on them. Not to say hello, not to say goodbye, not to say good Shabbos, not to say anything. You know, I play the role of the Rebbe who, you know, they'd like, you know, walk through the door and close it on me. Or, you know, like, I have no expectations from the relationship. Zero expectations. Because they're uncomfortable. You could see, if you want, you could see, you know, if you walk through the basement, or you walk through the high school, you can tell which kids can't handle social settings. There's one guy who I'm tracking. He has not yet said hello. I think it's like 2 years. No one here. No one here. People. Some. Most of them aren't like that. But they can't. And you have to know there are some guys will be very happy in a relationship, but you have to be choshesh that there are some guys who just can't. And this also works, you know, if you be a counselor in a bunk at the very beginning. It's much easier. You're having a good time. You can play, be friends a little bit. But some kids just can't handle just being right in there and being palsy-wowsy. They need a long time to warm up. They're totally testing the environment first. You know, they want to see if it's safe or not safe. Are they going to be embarrassed, not embarrassed? They have to know who they're speaking to.
Personality or just how they went through?
Yeah, so they're very conservative, very, IQ. Very conservative, and comfort in social settings. They're uncomfortable. Some people go into a social setting, they're just like looking, oh, great, you can't wait, they're going to talk to everyone. And some people, I always joke with Ray Bernstein that if you put him in a room with 1,000 people and you give him 10 minutes, I will guarantee you after 10 minutes he will be walking out with the richest guy in that room. If you put me in that room, I will vaday after 10 minutes be walk out with the biggest schlepper in that room. I will find the biggest nebuchal in that room and make friends with him. Because you know, I'm less of a risk taker, and the guys who are, you know, the people who are, you know, who are standing in the back are easy to find, and going to the front where everyone's talking around them. I'm sitting in the back also with some other guy who's uncomfortable. I'm probably sitting in the back just schmoozing with them. Okay, now, so the again, just to harp on that. So the first thing one wants to do if you want to have a hashpah on someone, the first thing you have to have is a relationship with them. Okay, that's a very, 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 very big thing to do. But you have to know that you don't have a relationship with the person. So if you don't have a relationship with them, do not expect to get too far with someone you do not have a relationship with. It's not a psul, it's just existence. It's reality. Most people are not going to hear a schmooze from some random person. Most people say, wow, I'm saw the light today. I can't believe it. You know, God is going to be bringing the eternal grace on the world. I didn't thought that, and he had such a great story with it, and it was so inspiring. It just, people do get inspired for a minute, but they go right on to the next, you know, the next thing. The inspiration and hashpa does not come from oratory and from some great insight, some great schmooze. Let's say you're learning with a high school kid at the beginning of the, you know, it's beginning of the year still. You learn them two times, you know. Don't think that, you know, the next day you come up with something and they're going to like be, wow. The hashpah is going to come from the core, over the course of the year when you establish relationship, it's going to get closer and closer until the point that, wow, now it's mamish at max. At max, now is the time that he can really open his heart. You know what a kid asked me today? I'll tell you, it's great mice happened today. So I walked outside, trying to think why I walked outside. I was on one end of the building and had to get something. I had to get a piece of paper that Rabbi Schlissel gave me, that they're having this, halachically speaking, Rav come. So he left me, he asked me to find out what Shalas and Shuvas, what Shalas they want to ask, but and I left that paper in the base manager this morning. So I had to go to the base manager. Every time I go to the base manager, I have to figure out where I am in the building, figure out which of the 9 routes is closer to get to the base manager. So the route that I was going to take today happened to put me by the mailboxes in the office. So from that, this from that point, was it quicker to go back through towards my office and around, or was it faster to go out past the window by Mrs. Lehrer over there? And I decided that at that moment, it's probably faster to go outside by Mrs. Lehrer. So when I said, as I was walked out the door, Mamash Minas Shamayim, I see Ari Hertz. Ari Hertz graduated YTC in, I think, 2007. And he just got smicha from RSA. And this is like one of the great nisim of the modern day history. And he knows I know. I know he knows, and he knows I know. I walked outside, and he's at yeshiva. I said, Ari, what are you doing here? He was there with his wife and baby. He says, well, I have to go tell someone something. I said, you have 3 minutes to speak to my class, 12th grade. He says, Rebbe, I'm going to the airport. I would love to. I just can't. I said, what time's your flight? I said, 1:00. I said, come on, it's 9:40. Take 3 minutes, okay, Mrs. Hertz. 3 minutes, 3 minutes. You know what kind of ashpa he can have in 3 minutes? He was in this high school. They know, and he was the person least likely to be getting smicha from RSA. And I don't mind saying this because I was at the Chag HaSmicha, and by the Mlava Malka, he spoke, and he said, he said this in front of all the Rosh Hashivas, in front of 500 people, I'm just a punk from Miami. I can't believe I'm getting smicha. Okay? And so I asked him if he could give that speech to the 12th grade. So he came in today, and he spoke to them for 3 minutes, literally 3 minutes, and they asked a question, like, what, trying to choose a yeshiva, what is the most important component that you would advise us to use in choosing a yeshiva? It's a great question that one of the boys asked. So, you know, he thought, oh, that's easy. There are a lot of criteria, but there's one that hands down is the best, most important component and criteria, and that's if you'll have a Rebbe who you could really get close with and open up with. That's what he thought was the biggest component. And then he didn't feel comfortable asking Ari this, but after Ari left, one boy asked me, like, Rebbe, why is it so important to have a Rebbe that you're going to open up with? Like, you know, what do you think I'm going to tell a Rebbe already? Like, I'm so open, I'm not a weirdo, I'm not going to tell a Rebbe anything. So, because he's not close with any Rebbe yet, but he couldn't even imagine, like, he couldn't even fathom, like, they can't even make the decision based on that, because they would never dream that would get close enough with a Rebbe. I say most high school guys are in the yeshiva 9 to 5. It's a totally different relationship. Totally different relationship. So, okay, some guys do it, some guys don't. Some guys can't get to it. They need to be coached to get to that level. Some guys do, and some are Bama, more adept at it, of course. And some Talmidim are also adept at getting to that level. So just to know that a person can't get anywhere without a relationship. So to take the steps to create a relationship, those are not so easy. You can want a relationship, doesn't mean you get a relationship. I think the first thing in establishing a relationship is simple, is pure, show that you care. Pure chesed. Pure chesed. One boy was sick. I called him up. How are you feeling? He was out a second day. He had fever. I texted him. I told him that, you know, Refuah Shleima, I said to him that, don't worry about falling behind. I'm happy to learn with you privately on Zoom or by phone or when you get back. I'll catch you up. Don't worry. We you know, it's very hard. With 20 guys, it's hard to learn. One-on-one, I probably do everything in 30 minutes or 40 minutes. I'll catch you up. Don't worry about it. I called him a couple of times before. Oh, I hope that's not my car. Is that my car? Stop. We don't hear it. So it just pure chesed. It goes a very long way. This I did not learn by myself. I got this from a Rebbe that used to be here before some of your time, Rabbi Dudovitz. When he first did it, I thought it was stomach not real. But then I realized that it was real. He meant it real, and it made a very big roshim on a lot of guys. And I said, wow, I would have thought of doing it if I would have thought that somebody wouldn't think that it's just faking. But I started doing it before Yom Nerum. I asked the guys to write their names on index card, and I daven for them on Yom Nerum. And that was very meaningful. Like, you pass around a card, you know, a thing, and it's write your name, you know, first name and your mother's name. So I'm going to daven for you on Yom Nerum. Like, you know, you would think that some high school kids who are like a little cynical, they're gonna write like, you know, Ben Mickey Mouse or Minnie Mouse, or I can make a joke like high school kids would make. Not one of them. One kid didn't get to one kid. The guy asked for it, the card, to write the card, and I really doubt for them. So, you know, every Twila, I took out the card and I had them in mind. I wanted to doubt for them. It's true, but I also wanted to show them that I care about them. And it's, you have to find the opportunities to care about them. They don't present themselves necessarily, you know, every single minute. You know, you have to look for them. They don't always fall, sometimes it falls into your lap. You know, kids not in school for a week, it fell into your lap. Go call him, find out how he's doing. But if a kid's there every day, you know, and he's basically learning, you have no reason to talk to him. You have to find ways to show that you care. Here's another one that I learned early on, but it's not as natural. Because guys in yeshiva, they amongst peers, we when we grow up with our friends, we just sort of rib each other. And so if a person's used to that, I was used to that when I was in... through after Kollel, through coming to yeshiva, I was still in that mode of, you know, the best line is the most chashuv line, like the you know, to find a line on a guy that's amazingly cutting is meshubach. Well, Kol Marba Reza meshubach, and it totally does not work if you want to show someone you care. It's maybe amongst friends, it's, you know, guys have a good time with it. You know, let's give you that one, but with Talmidim does not work ever.
Not Beis High School does?
Ever, no. Beis Mishna High School depends what the intent of the relationship is, but probably never. I would put it Beis Mishna High School is never. Once they get to, you have to wait till they get to Beis Mishna, then you can go back to, you know, Shtachida, but not when they're in high school. You're in Beis Mishna, no. You can't do it. It could only be mishvech them. So I had to adjust. You could only say good about them. Do you know what I tell the guys in my shir? I tell them, you know, you do not have to worry. I will not make fun at you at graduation. Because I'm speaking. They're quiet, I'm speaking. They know that. I will not ever, ever, ever say anything that's not only the most, you know, the best shevach and compliment about you. I will never tell anyone what's going on here in this room. I will never tell anyone that, you know. So, and they, I say that because I think it is on their mind. Like, what am I going to say, you know? And on that note, some of you might be thinking, but too kind to ask. Like, but let's say there's nothing good to say about them. And I went through this whole sugya, you know, and on this, on to that, I want to answer. It's a very cruel line. It's very cruel, but it's a. It answers the question just sharply. You'll remember the line, and you'll know. It's like you can just give you just wipe it out of your head. Every person has a matzeva. I know that's like very cold and a rude awakening. Every person has a matzeva. Do you think on anyone's matzeva, someone's going to shtuch them out? You know, he was good while he lasted.
Did that, he's done.
You know, I told you not to, whatever. No, nobody writes a joke on a matzeva. Everyone has a matzeva. There's something good. And I once had a kid who was, he had, everything was terrible. Everything was, this teacher was terrible, and that Rebbe was terrible, and this principal was terrible, and these friends were terrible, and the class you put me in is terrible, and my parents are terrible, and the school is terrible, and everywhere I go is terrible. Everything is terrible. You know, why did Hashem do this to me? Everything is terrible. So I told him, you know, it says Urei Betuv Yerushalayim. You know, there's a lot in Yerushalayim also that you could see that's not good, but you have to see the Tuv, Betuv Yerushalayim. So I said, you know, we're gonna do a once a week we're gonna meet, and I'm gonna do an exercise with you, and everything I pick up, you're gonna have to find five things that's good about it. Five things that's good about it. And then we used to practice. He used to come into the room, and he trained. At first, it was so hard. It was so hard. I would pick up the most random things here. Okay, I'd pick up something like this. Five things good about this. Okay, let's go around the room. One.
You hurt someone with it.
Show you what that
you can, you're what you need. You should have your water all the day.
Okay.
Covers the water.
He just said that.
It has the grooves, which makes it easier to grip and open.
There we go. We got five.
Sure.
Five things good. We used to do this. We used to do this. We would take turns. He would give me one to do, and I would do it. We go about 15 minutes. We go up and down. I have to find five things good about every thing I do. And I really got that. It was good for me also, because you have to be able to look at something and find five good things. You know, one good thing is easy. Five, you really have to push yourself. Now you're getting into the realm of that kid who there's nothing good to say. You have to push yourself. I wanted to be up at five is a lot. And it got to the point where when I would observe classrooms, so, you know, what no teacher or rabbi wants to be observed, you know, in a classroom. No one wants to be observed. But what I would try and do is, I would go into the room. I would never go in if I didn't have a device to send an email to the guy, to the teacher or Rebbe. And I wouldn't leave the classroom until I pressed send on the five things that were good about what I saw. Five things. So I had to stay long enough.
No negatives.
No negatives. Yeah, once in a blue moon you could say I was wondering why that kid was hanging from a nail on the wall. Once in a blue, was there any meaning to the X over a guy's nose that you wrote in the middle of the class with a marker? You know, so five good things. It's a great exercise to do. You know, I learned the trick from when I was in Kollel. So I went with a chabur of five, and we went to Rav, I think it was Rav Asher Zimmerman, who was a posek in Borough Park, elderly yid. Vaguely remember he had some roots in by Rav David, and I went with, you know, Rabbi Schmidman and Rabbi Muscat and Rabbi Semmel, and there was one or two others in Borough Park, and and he told us we were doing Hilchas Nida Shalas. Without going into any details, Hilchas Nida, to be a posek in Hilchas Nida, you have to be an expert on colors. So there's a difference between, you know, this shade and this shade. It's just a touch, but your eyes have to be so sensitized to this color, this color. This color is tar, this color is tame. So what we told us to do is, you know, he showed us, and then the rest of the week, every time you see colors, you would, you know, you see that furniture, you would say, okay, tame tar, the Coke bottle, tame tar. And we were going around the room like, oh, that guy's yarmulke, that guy's hair, that room, that garbage can, that old banana, you know, and you're constantly doing that, everything around. So a person, you know, I applied that principle to, you know, that day with the kid. You must find good things to say that you can articulate back, reflect back to them, and appreciate it, you know, believe it. You know, you could make a, I do take liberties just for a sense of humor. You know, I had one maestro last year, just, I don't know if it was the right thing to do, but I was giving a shiur, and one guy stormed in from another shiur, and I just want to give something to someone. Like I'm in the middle of like emphytosis, and he wants to give something to someone. So I said, listen, don't take this the wrong way. Get out. It wasn't like that. It was, you can use it, you can find ways to do it humorously, didn't that, you know, but you know that it's very important, and even when you do that, that boy, whose name shall remain nameless, that boy took that as a love note, because I said it, I should have said it with a punch, and I said it with a smile, with a little humor, so he got the message, but he took it like I really love him. I heard this great word from Dr. Yisrael Feuerman, the son's uncle, who told me a great word in communication. You can get the same good will from a no as you can from a yes. So let's say someone asks you, can I borrow $100? And oof, the guy's done so much for me. Oosh, I only have $100 on me. Oosh, I have to go on a bus. Oosh, they only take cash. Oosh, I'm not going to be home. I have no way to get money. I can't tell him yes. I can't believe he's asking me, but he just did so much for me, and that causes you tremendous stress. And you have two choices: tell him yes, or like avoid him. And like, you know, so what usually happens is like you just get angry at him. I know, you just avoid him, and then you bring about bad will. But you can gain goodwill from saying a no. You could say, okay, this part is I'm on my own, but you could say like, oh, I can't believe it. You, after everything you've done with me, I'm going on a bus and I'm not gonna have a chance to have money. I wish I could help you now. You could say it that way. People don't realize you can garner goodwill from a no as you can for a yes, which means many people have difficulty disciplining because they don't want to garner bad will, so they think they're garnering goodwill by not disciplining, but you can get the same goodwill from a no as from a yes. It's very good to, very important to keep that in mind.
I would probably do that with a Talmud.
With what?
With a
Talmud. With a Talmud? Do what?
Just
not give them $100?
I don't know, whatever the case is.
Well, turn the shower inside the science room.
You could say something like,
I'm sorry.
You're addicted. You know, the guy takes out his phone. You tell me you know you're addicted. You have to use humor, and you have to know. You have to make a difference between the infraction and the violation. They have to be like red zones, so they know. But it's not that. That's a good topic in itself. Remind me, it's. How to discipline, you know, effective discipline is an art in itself, but I don't think I could do justice to it.
But what's the difference between an infraction and a violation?
An infraction would be jaywalking, and a violation is driving under the influence. Like, one is like there's no tolerance, you're in jail, and nothing I can do about it. And you jaywalk, it does contribute to the lack of safety overall, but you shouldn't do it. Please don't do that. You know? So that's what I meant. The infraction means a light violation as opposed to a very severe felony. And the last one I wrote down is this is much harder than it sounds. Is be humble. Do not take credit and take all the blame. I heard from Rabbi Feuerman, your grandfather, Zichron Levracha, told me that he was doing some coaching for an assistant principal somewhere at a prestigious school, and Rabbi Feuerman was the consultant, and the assistant principal was the one who hired Rabbi Feuerman to be the consultant, and he said, like, I'm working with my principal to try and get a job description. I want to please him. I want to get a job description. And he kept saying it a few times. He's not giving me a job description. And I've been waiting already for a month to get a job description. He's not giving me a job description. So finally, Ray Fordman said, I know your job description. He says, you do? Why, you spoke to the principal? I know. I didn't speak to him, but I know the job description. Okay, what's the job description? Guys, remember this. You will save yourself tsaras the rest of your life. This is me talking. This is the best eitzah. If I had to rate the top piece of advice I ever got from Rabbi Feuerman, this would be it. I know the job description. Wow, how do you know? You didn't speak to the principal? No. And you know my job description? Yes. You're not kidding me? It's not just like I know. Okay, take out a pen and write this down. Okay. When something goes right in the school, you give the principal all the credit. When something goes wrong in the school, you want to finish the sentence, guys? You take all the blame. You take all the blame. And end of job description. That's the job description. When something goes right, you give him all the credit. When something goes wrong, you take all the blame. You know what I told my 12th graders this year? I told them last year also. You know what I told them? But I did it for the same thing. It's the same rule. I tell them the statistic that you would think that no instructor would ever tell their students. I told them that 90, this is true fact, a true statistic, 90% of student misbehavior is teacher-induced. 90% of student misbehavior is teacher-induced. That means it's the teacher's fault if you don't learn. So you're sitting in class, and every second you don't learn, he is worse at fault. It's like it's a messed up relationship, right? Like every time you don't learn, it's his fault. But that's the pshat, because I told it to my class on the first day. Right, you would think that they should do whatever they want. Like, why would I tell it to them? First of all, what I'm doing is I'm being humble. I'm not being humble. It's not I was so hard to be humble. I'm being humble because it's true. I'm giving them all the credit, and I give them all the credit. If they do good, I give them all the credit. Wow, you're learning so well today. And if they're not learning, I tell them, you know what I'm telling, I tell them, I'm a failure as a Rebbe. I say I am a failure. I didn't prepare well today, guys. I see you're not interested in this. I take all the blame. And then they say, no, Rebbe, you're not a failure. You're not a failure. We'll learn. You know? I do it, it's real, because who wants to learn if the Rebbe's taking all the credit? Like, no one's, that's not, you want to give them the credit. That's the joy of learning. I try and make it that if the most natural consequence of not learning, the natural consequence, right, it's just not give punishments. It's supposed to be a natural consequence. So the what do you think the natural consequence? If you watch, if you have free tickets to the seventh game of the World Series or the Super Bowl, and you wake up late and you don't get there on time, what's the natural consequence? Yeah, you missed the game. Yeah, you come late to the game. This is like history, historic. You missed the game. So it's very hard to do. I have a hard time doing this, but I try to do it, that the natural consequence of coming late to class or not coming to class is that you missed the class. You missed my class. So like I felt so bad for you, you know, that class. I really prepared you. You would love that class, and that hopefully is enough most of the time. And if it doesn't help on Tuesday or on Wednesday, but it'll help on Thursday, they'll feel bad, and they'll hopefully. And then you have to make the class worthy. So I think that Rabbi Fordman's vort in is the same vort, that if something goes right, you give the principal all the credit. Something goes wrong, you take all the blame. Is that easy to do? That is torture to do. That is torture. Very few people could do that effectively. Very few people. And those people are very, very successful because they're very humble. You can see them in the in the secular world also, not Jewish either. You know, some people just naturally could figure that out. There are seminars in running companies that have figured a lot of these nuances out, and humility is one of them. So that's saying the same thing with the kids, to be humble and give them the credit. When things go right, to give them the credit. So anyway, so those are the nine things I came up with. Huh? Yeah, no, I said it's not, we should really make a mnemonic device, you know, 1 through 10, but I only came up with 9, so we'll have to come up with the 10th one. Okay, so we should open the floor now, because people that may have questions or, you know, not, but those are the art. So the word is that I went through the list today with Rabbi Rigida and Rabbi Dreyfus and Rabbi Kier. There are 23 seniors, and there are 40 plus base manager guys. So you can figure it out. Each one of you could take 3/4. You know, or one and a quarter.
No, sure, I have you.
3/4 and chop them up and figure out, okay, now you can't bet 1,000. Not everyone should stay, but the ones who could, you know, they're probably better off than traveling. You know, unfortunately, there are a lot of chesronos elsewhere they don't know about. And I felt some guys, you know, they have it very good in certain places, and then they go out, they're on their own, their parents aren't around, their rebbeim aren't around, take 2-3 months to learn who they are. You know, there are it's not so posh, going elsewhere is not so posh. Some guys, it is good to go away, but some guys not. So I don't have to tell you guys know the story, and you know what's going on better than I do. So you had your own experiences. Why so funny? Someone passed me a can of dry.
I'd like to welcome. I know it's Talmud.
Rebbe was talking about me, like, doing all these things to show the kid that you care. Like, isn't the first step is that, like, the Rebbe actually has to care. Like, the Rebbe doesn't care, so then it appears very disingenuous.
Does
anyone
care?
I'm assuming the Rebbe cares, but
yeah, it's very easy. Okay, it's very easy to care about, like,
perfect timing.
I'm sure in every class there's some kids that just like, they like, they're very annoying. You know, they the Rebbe has this whole like, agenda he wants to do this class. And just, like, for those kids, it's not very hard for them to really care. So, how does Rebbe work on that?
I mean, if a kid's not interested, you mean?
Because or worse, I mean, he just destroys what the Rebbe wants to do. Like, Rebbe comes in and says, I want to teach this blind, the kid is disruptive, and whatever. So, for the Rebbe to, like, Rebbe can't just do these acts to, like, show the kid that he cares. He doesn't care. I assume that
Yeah. I mean, let's call a spade a spade. Why will the kid want to learn that blot? So I think the first caring is that since the Rebbe wants the kid to learn, he has to figure out why that kid's going to want to learn that block. Once he figures that out, that's the first way to show you care, because you want to be successful in learning, because he's really better off if he knows how to learn. He'll know how to learn if he learns this blot. So now you have to come up with a mahalach of why he's going to want to learn. You have to give him the motivation first.
Part of the motivation is because the Rebbe wants him to do it?
Yeah. No, he's going to be, the kid will be better off if he learns it. Not because the Rebbe will get a good write-up from his principal. The best reason for him to learn is because it's going to be better for him. But how will the Rebbe convince the guy to learn? Now you know it's better for him, but he doesn't think it's better for him. So why should he do it? So, okay, you could use grades a little bit. It doesn't work so great. You know, there are some kids left in the world who care about their grades. There are some kids like that. But you know, in my class, out of 8 kids, one and a half kids who are really motivated by a grade. And if I would ever say it, they would resent it terribly.
What does that mean, a grade motivation?
I tell them that if you get 100 on this test, you're going to get an A on your report card. And if you don't show up to class, I'm going to take 5 points off your grade.
And what's the motivation behind an A? What's
the, I'm saying there's one
Harvard.
I would say there's 10% of kids who care less.
What is that motivation?
Harvard.
What?
Okay. Yeah, that comes from
people
with good.
You know,
it's like
most some kids are just they want to be rule for their rule followers by nature. You know, they're not going to go through a yellow because you're supposed to stop. Oh. They're going to go 55 miles an hour. They'll go up to 59. They're rule followers. They're very obedient.
And the other whatever the others. 6.5 kids. How does everybody motivate them? They just feel like they're laying the rugby down if they don't learn. Like, why are they learning?
At some point in the year, that could work, but not the first time.
You so have the English classes function.
Well,
they don't.
If you could find something pertinent that interests them, for example, Shnayim Oksim Talos was very hard for relevance. It was very hard. But Bava Kama was much easier. Bava Nezikin, that was much easier because there are damages all the time. Every day there are damages happening. Torts and, you know, bring down real cases that happen. And, you know, I know Shnayim Oksim Talos, I found it much harder. I found Yevamos easier than Shnayim Oksim Talos. Because it's totally esoteric on a mitzvah they don't know about. So okay, it's like learning Zvachim. You know, so we're learning Zvachim this year. The one day, you know, when Mashiach comes, you know, so I know I have to find that there's, you know, Heicha and Yonim going on. You have to find that for Yavamas. And believe it or not, the Lumdus, you know, you feel good when you figure out this long Rashi. All it is Reuven. The one thing I would change in all the Rashis on Yavamas is. No. I would change the names from Reuven Shimon, and he did Rachel and Leah a lot. Reuven and Shimon and Rachel and Leah to make them sisters, you know, or not. But I would always do Reuven Shimon, Rachel Sarah, because then the Reishes married each other, and then the Shins or Sins married each other. So it's easy to remember. So that's my only change. But you have to find, if you want to find relevance for them, and it could be, like, I told the guys, Dror Damona is the most difficult sugya, in my opinion. In all my 15 years learning, Dror Damona was the most difficult sugya I had in everything. Was it the most difficult sugya? I don't know, there are a lot of difficult sugyas, you know. I didn't have such a hard time, but I said the Chabura on it. Dror Mona, I skipped. I understood what Dror Mona was. But I told them it's the most difficult. This I got from my Foreman also. I got most of it, I think, from my Foreman, so you'll hear him quoted a lot. But he said like this, a Rebbe, or a teacher, didn't say Rebbe, a teacher tells his students Here's, like, they used to have Goofus and Gallant, and, you know, two cartoons. Goofus was always doing something bad, and Gallant was doing something good. There was that picture of the mother saying, it's time to come inside, it's time for supper. And Gallant puts his bat down, coming, mommy, and runs, and Gallant says, oh, don't worry, there's still another 10 minutes. So you always do the, you know, the right thing. You tell a kid that this Gemara is one of the hardest Gemaras of the Shas. So Gallant, Rebbe, or teacher, says, so you better be on your game. Make sure you get a lot of sleep. Bring your notebooks. Bring your thing. Because if you don't get this, you're going to fail your midterm, fail your final. Don't be coming to me. I'm teaching it right. And pay attention. This is the last time you're going to get it. That's, I would say, the wrong way to say it. But there are people, believe it or not, there are instructors who say it that way still, amazingly. But I would suggest to say this is one of the most difficult sugyas to learn, and it's mandatory learning. We have to, this is something you can't go through Bava Metzia and not learn this, but I'm going to help you, and you're going to feel like $1 million after you know it. I'm going to help you through it. You're going to feel so good. Just give me your minds for a few minutes. That would be like a better way, better motivation to say it. Like, you're there to help them. It's hard, but I'm going to help you. We have a very hard midterm, but we're spending a few days, and I'm going to help you. So then they hear that they have, it's a tough midterm coming up, but I'm here to help you. I'm going to help you. So at the same time you give them the challenge, you say, I'll be there to help you.
The reason why most of them won't say that is just because, like, too vulnerable to them? Like, why would
a Muslim
take that route?
Like, no one's going to say 90. You know, I said this once at a Torah Masorah convention.
Oh, what?
At a Torah Masorah convention.
Left.
Oh, my gosh, the guy was so angry at me. 90% of teacher, of student me say teacher induced. Oh, my gosh, when one guy was worried would say, who said such a ridiculous thing? You know, he was so angry.
Who does that?
Yeah, who said that? Where's the
someone said that. Oh, who, oh.
How do you get to
look it up?
No, what? No. How does the person that writing this?
This guy Joe White.
That's based on research.
Hey, what kind of research? Like, he stopped talking and then he started talking.
Oh, where did I Foreman get it from? I don't know. Cool. You only have to say Ray Foreman. It's like you say the Vilna Gaon said. You don't say how do you know it. The Vilna Gaon said it. So Vilna Gaon said it. You don't have to go past the Vilna Gaon. Vilna Gaon said it. Gary Foreman said it. You don't have to go further. He has all the footnotes and the, you know, he had a, you know, he looked it up. Yes.
If someone is selling themselves short, how do you help them to pass the matching?
Don't tell them that they're selling themselves short. It's a terrible place. What are you doing that for? What are you ruining yourself for? You have to, you know, you have to validate his choice. I want to go to, let's take a real bad place. I found this kibbutz to go to where I'll really experience the land and be very, very inspired. I've been, you know, I know you want me to be inspired, so I got my, you know, my shorts and my sandals. I'm going to a kibbutz. Yeah, I'm going to my kibbutz. Let's say he's doing that. So, like, you can't tell him that it's the most ridiculous thing. I can't believe it. I'm going to sit shiva right now. No, that's not a true story, but it is a true story that guys have made decisions. And, you know, we had a matzav here about 15 years ago, 20 years ago, where the students were very angry at the school. We didn't know why. Common thing that comes up every few years. But we found out. And one of the things that was discovered is that this was back in the day, 20 years ago, when. Can we shut this off now? This line.